Hello there. You're about ready to listen to a very special sneak peek of our Patreon exclusive show, Spider-Versity. This is the show where Sal from Comic Pop and myself explore every aspect of Spider-Man media, including all the movies from Spider-Man's 1, 2, and 3, The Amazing Spider-Man, the MCU's Iron Spider saga, and even Venom. But not only that, we are now expanding our journey to include the iconic Spider-Man the Animated Series. So if you want to check out those episodes and more, you can do that over at patreon.com/almoststupidanswers. Enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Spider-Versity as we transition from the movies, because we've seen every Spider-Man movie except Morbius, and now we are into Spider-Man, the animated series. I want to thank you all for joining us as we begin this new stage of our Spider-Versity journey. But first and foremost, the person I'd like to thank is Sal.
Oh, thank you.
Who's going on this journey with me. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Spider-tastic, man.
So,
webs away.
After we've seen every Spider-Man movie and the Venom movies, how did it feel to go into further back in time to Spider-Man the Animated Series?
Easy. It was very easy to just watch four episodes of this 20-minute long cartoon show.
Yes.
Plus, I loved it. Like, when I was a kid, I watched so much of it, and it was something that I had been waiting for forever. I was reading the comics at the time, and I don't know if you remember, but there was a period, and I remember having some. It went from excitement to disappointment and frustration to then excitement again, because every episode is so watchable.
Yes,
but then there's also so much of it where you're like, and I don't know why, for whatever reason, the mood I was in, I watched all four episodes. I watched two more. I just went like, where's this going? Like, yeah. You know, where did this end up? Because I eventually just dropped off the show. Eventually, I was like, okay, I've got to focus on socialization in school. Like,
yes.
I don't have time to watch Spider-Man the Animated Series. I'm going to watch the girls in class. Like, not this anymore.
Yes.
And that was like, so, but yeah, man, every comic book like that Spider-Man came out with for a time came with like an animation cell that was
a
lie.
Yeah.
Just a fake animation cell of the cartoon. Way better looking animation cells than the cartoon, mm-hmm. but good looking show. So,
you know what? It's interesting. As we go into this, like you, I was very excited for the show. I watched it religiously to a point. I didn't realize, like, because looking ahead, I was looking over like the first season. I'm like, oh, every episode I know, I've clearly seen the first season of the show a great many times.
Definitely.
Past that, I might have seen every episode maybe once.
Mm-hmm.
Because I vaguely remember all of them, but like stuff like we're going to get into stuff in season one that I'm like, wait, that was season one? How many times did I watch season one?
Right.
The answer is a bunch. but and as we were talking about before we went on air, I've been rewatching Batman the Animated Series. So I thought going into this, I'm like, because Batman the Animated Series, it's some of the stories, especially in the early episodes, like there's one where he's fighting the Underdwellers, which is a pirate in the sewer kidnapping kids.
I love that episode, man. It's such a good one.
Well,
plus, the animation can't be topped.
But that's the thing. That's the thing.
Such a good-looking episode.
Is that the episode itself is like, what are we doing? But it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And so I thought going into this, like, I remember as a kid not being terribly impressed with anime because I'm watching Batman the Animated Series, right? And they're going for a very – Batman the Animated Series is going for a very specific stylistic thing that is cool and it is timeless and it will look amazing forever. I think Justice League Unlimited, all that is a great show and I think it looks good. It still visually does not match the first season of Batman the Animated Series.
Nothing will ever look like that show ever did. The studio that made what I used to, as a kid, as a child, and I like my wife was always like, I wish I could meet you as a kid because you seem like you had like a little briefcase and you were really because I remember being like cheap or where I went like I'd be watching the Batman animated series and I go, oh, the A-team's on this one.
Yes.
You know, like half of, which is ironic, half of the Two-Face episodes look fire.
Yeah.
And then the other half, the second half looks like dog shit in comparison.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? And like, I swear to God, every time I talk about animation when it comes to Spider-Man animated series or Batman animated series, there are more comments than not that say, Who even notices that kind of thing? Like, well, who even cares? And I'm like, dude, it's night and day.
Yeah, once you're keyed into it, it reminds me of the animation studio, I think Studio Mir, that did Avatar: The Last Airbender and did a bulk of Korra, and then you see like their episodes, and then you cut to the other studio that they had to do fill in stuff, and you're like, ooh, still good, but.
Not
like you said, night and day. It helped you appreciate at the level the rest of the show was operating at.
Yeah,
you're like,
right.
Oh, I took this for granted.
Exactly. Once you notice, you will always notice. Like, yeah. And then I remember them switching over, and so like the A team that did like Heart of Ice and the Underdwellers, they bankrupted themselves, so they're gone. Yes. They'll never come again. And so then the new standard became like Mask of the Phantasm. That animation studio that made Mask of the Phantasm made the really good looking episodes of like seasons 2 and beyond.
Yeah.
And you know, it's still great, but it's not like it. Can you imagine like a 90 minute long Batman animated movie by the team who made that Mr. Freeze episode?
Well, and you talked about them bankrupting. So it's one of those, like, intellectually, I know when they changed the style to kind of match what they were doing with Superman, which became the house style leading into Justice League. You're like, well, of course, like as much as I would prefer we kept this. It's like, well, like you just said, they bankrupt. It's like we can't operate at this level. We're not allowed to. So anyway, long preamble to go to. This show's actually animated pretty good. Like it holds up better than I remember it being. It's not Batman the Animated Series, but also unfair comparison.
No, but at the same time, I did like when it works, it works so well.
Yeah.
Like this is a sexy show when it is working. Mm-hmm. And when it isn't, and you can tell from the first episode. I remember just as a kid, I don't know why, and I know that like some people like to point out whenever you're watching like Scooby-Doo, oh, there's the door that's gonna move.
Yep.
Oh, there's the floor that's gonna move. I don't know. I'm really keyed into that. I really notice that kind of stuff. But like when they reuse animation, I am hyper aware of
this.
And I was hyper as a kid. I was like, why? Like I know now why. It's like it's because we have to fill time, and it's not like shooting where you can just take human beings and make them talk for another 10 minutes. No, you have to make that from scratch.
Yes,
and it's like everything you need to reproduce is money.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can find ways to cut corners, and they're like, your favorite shows all did that, I'm like, not like Spider-Man the Animated Series. Like and what's funny is we're talking about the Spider-Man Animated Series, so I will keep it in that wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I remember seeing apparently one of the showrunners or whatever did a podcast recently, and he got really uptight about people giving it a hard time about like kowtowing to censorship and reusing animation. And those are my two major criticisms of the show, bar none. And it's, you could tell this show is like, this show, all it wants to do is be on TV. Like there's a book, or at least there's a chapter in a book about Batman the Animated Series where they're like, here are the things they wouldn't let us do, and here's how we pushed the envelope.
Yes. Now,
every time we got notes, we pushed back. Spider-Man the Animated Series, one of those things where they went, whatever you want and more. Like they were the good boy. They sat in the front row. They were the teacher's pet for the censors, because street thugs fired laser pistols.
Yes.
The word, like, words that had been used in, like, the first two episodes were never used again.
Well, we're going to get into what had to have been a note at the end of. So this episode, the episode of this
Night
podcast
of
is going to be the first two episodes. And for those that want to watch along, we are doing it at least for the first season. I haven't looked ahead, but I do know they get into, like, arcs. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of jumping around.
Yeah,
but we are watching it in the order that it is on Disney Plus, which is in air order. And I know the only difference, I think, and this is only matters into the second episode of this podcast, is the Mysterio episode and the Doc Ock episode are flipped.
Yes, thank you. Okay, because I was like, no, Mysterio did not get introduced after the Spider Slayers.
Yeah.
Like, I remember vividly Doc Ock being one of the first villains.
Doc Ock, I think that's production order. Doc Ock was before. And here's what I'll say about that. I know some people are like sticklers, like, you got to do production order. One, it's two episodes that are flipped. And two, I'm watching Batman the Animated Series in production order, and it's kind of nonsense. It clearly, this is the order they produced them in. This was not necessarily the intended order of airing. I'm not sure the order it aired in was also the intended order, but whatever. Anyway, point is, I'm not a stickler for that stuff. It's two episodes flipped. We're watching it, so it's easier for us. It's easier for you at home. We're watching it in Disney Plus order. So today's podcast episode will be Night of the Lizard, and Spider Slayers 1. Next episode will be Spider Slayers 2 and Mysterio. Cool. And the speaking of censors, there's a very specific line at the end of Spider Slayers 1. You're like, wait, what? That clearly was a censor's note. Anyway, let's get into it. We're talking about season 1, episode 1, Night of the Lizard. The original air date was November 19th, 1994. This is just a few days after Young DJ's birthday. Happy birthday, wow. DJ. And I'm going to imagine that I probably did watch it, because there's like a few month gap between this episode and when the show started, which is the same thing they did with Batman Animated Series. And I vividly remember watching the first episode of the Batman Animated Series when it aired in prime time. Mm-hmm. I think it was over at a friend's house. So I have to imagine Young DJ probably made time to watch this when it aired originally.
Definitely. Yeah, I definitely did. There's no question. I was a Spider-Man fan. The two favorite characters from childhood to now are Batman and Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. I watched both those shows when they aired.
Yep.
There's no question about that. In this show, I was like, I was hyped.
Yeah.
Because I had scrambled together as much Spider-Man animation as I could. I watched Spider-Man 81. I watched Spider-Man His Amazing Friends. Mm-hmm. I watched the horrible TV like live-action show. I watched the 66 cartoon.
Yeah.
67 cartoon. I watched it all, and I was just like, I'm ready for real Spider-Man. Like, I'm ready for this.
Yep. And I think of the ones you just listed, this is probably the closest to it.
We improved
as time went on.
Yes.
So we've got to start with the opening, the great opening sequence, so 90s. Spider blood, Spider Man, radioactive spider blood, Spider Man.
I never got it as a kid. I was like, what? Like, why is this? What is this? The music track, fire, no question about it. It slaps. I'm like, yes. But like the words, I'm like, what?
I can't wait. So the whole musical theme of the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies is based around like the 60s like original thing. I can't wait till we get to a nostalgia point where we bring this back, like where this somehow we reference this in the score.
Well, the most insane thing is, right, like they did it with X-Men.
They did do it with X-Men, and if I can be
wasted,
waste. Listen. Sal and I have different feelings about that movie. I really loved it, but. It's like, wait, you're going to blow the theme on this moment?
I had tears in my eyes when Spider-Man came to the MCU, and over the Marvel logo, they played an orchestral version of the 67 cartoon.
Yeah.
I was like, hell yes. And everyone was like, when the X-Men come to the MCU, we're going to get an orchestral theme of the theme.
Yeah.
And then they blew it on a cameo,
which I guess is when the X-Men joins the MCU technically. Like, this is the first one, but it's like, this isn't this isn't what I had in mind. This isn't one of
not exactly what I had in mind.
And what we didn't know, I'm joking, but what we didn't know is they also used the theme from the 90s Fantastic Four cartoon, but nobody cares, so it didn't matter.
I wish that would have been amazing. I love that. I that theme. Every once in a while, I'll play it and annoy the shit out of my wife. She hates that theme, but I love playing that theme.
I also got to mention that I think they updated it over time, and I think the version has to be one from a later season because Morbius is in this opening sequence, and it's like you didn't have that yet. you didn't have that yet at the first episode.
No, but they did a Venom. They were ready for Venom.
They were ready for... Well, and again, I thought we sat on Venom. Like, I remember when Spectacular Spider-Man, which to me is still the high watermark of Spider-Man adaptations.
Yep.
When they did Venom in the first season, I was like, in the first season? And then they did. I'm like, oh, no, really? You did a good job. But I didn't realize... No. They already did Venom in the first season. We've set a precedent here that we get to Venom quick.
Yeah, well, Avi Arad is above Stan Lee in the credits. Yeah.
yeah. And listen, I appreciate it here. Avi Arad's Venom pushing, maybe not other places here, especially Young DJ, all for it. Especially since in this episode, we get Eddie Brock, voiced by Hank Azaria, who's a goddamn legend, man. I didn't even fucking know. It's like, that's Hank Azaria. Well, good job, man.
Also, I didn't know that. You said it. I was like, yes, it was.
We got Christopher Daniel Barnes as Peter Parker, Spider-Man. His performance holds up, I think. I think he does a good job.
Yeah, absolutely. No. Dude's
and
a legend.
Late, great Ed Asner as J. Jonah Jameson. And I got to say, obviously, J.K. Simmons, top of the pile. Close there, at least, because the second Ed Asner's voice comes in as J. Jonah Jameson, it's like, oh, yeah, this is how I read JJ in the comics for years, was this voice in my head.
My question is, did they cast Ed Asner as J. Jonah Jameson because of the Mail Your Tyler Moore show?
Yes.
Right?
Obviously.
It had to be.
Obviously.
It just so happened that he's also perfect for JJ.
He's so
but
good.
But there's no way they weren't like, yeah.
Solid Granny Goodness. Side note. Side note.
No, I remember when Granny Goodness premiered and I was like, are you shitting me, Ed Asner?
Yeah.
Okay, show, I'm in.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Perfect. So we open in a way that I think every Spider-Man thing should open, where he's talking about New York City. He's like, New York City, if only things were as peaceful down there as they look up here. And I'm like, yep, every Spider-Man movie should start with him talking about New York. Also, I do, before we get off the intro, I think we should bring back, I think animated shows in particular are good at this, but I know sitcoms used to do this well, is where it's like, hey, here's the entire premise of the show in 30 seconds. Here's everything you need to know. In hindsight, like I think in Homecoming, they're like, hey, here is Spidey in Civil War. Great catch up, but this would have also been a really good way to be like, hey, by the way, here's all the bits.
Here's the world.
Yeah, here's all the things. Like, I think a great example of this in comic form is All-Star Superman, where like in a page, Grant Morrison is like, dead planet, rocketed to Earth, raised by farmers, we're off to the races. That's all you need to know, we're off to the races.
Absolutely. No, Spider-Man, there are few characters you can shorthand the origins. Three of them. Superman, Batman, and Spider-Man. Where everybody gets it, you could sum it up in one line. Every Spider-Man show, cartoon, movie, whatever, just open it with a quick thing. Dead uncle, New York City, web powers, moving on. Like,
yeah, he got bit by the spider. He got spider powers.
You know what actually did it really well? That horrible Spider-Man Unlimited show.
I never watched it. I never watched it.
Don't, but like the opening credits, like the opening theme, they kept the whole electronica bullshit, but like they just did a like this panel where they just showed like nebbish teenager, you know, Spider-Man in the costume letting the burglar run.
Yeah.
Dead uncle. Like, they just, boom, boom, boom. You did it in the opening credits, and we're moving on. And I'm like, yes,
love it.
Thank you.
Love it. And I would like to promise that I won't keep mentioning it, but I don't think I can make that promise. But also, I like the Spectacular Spider. This show does something similar, where it's like, we held on the origin until, like, a later episode where it, like, mattered. Like, it's like, okay, here's why we're going to bring it back. Anyway. We cut to guys in the sewers. They are working in the subways. Is it, they're subway guys. In my brain, I said sewers. We get to the sewers later. They're in the subway. That's what we're doing.
They're
subway. We learn they're the subway techs or whatever.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But we get this whole bit that was clearly for some writer that was was trying to say something.
Yes.
One of these guys working is a former TV exec that is now a subway technician.
Yes.
Great.
maybe he's talking about himself. Like, I used to work on like real TV and now I'm doing this like sewer garbage. Like, maybe that's the joke.
Yeah.
It was really weird and it was very specific. It was targeted for not children who are watching the show. Maybe it's like a nyuk nyuk. Okay, that's I guess a funny gag, but
yes.
It's silly.
You know, it's just weird to do one for the execs right off the bat. The showrunner is like, no, I need a joke for me within the first 10 seconds of this cartoon for kids.
Again, though, that is a good that's a good sign of things to come, where it's just like, yes, masters, whatever you say.
So they get attacked by the lizard. The TV exec guy gets away, drives away in a panic. Spider-Man has this like it takes a few episodes for them to dial in Spider-Man's joke, because he has this long ass joke where he's like, another satisfied graduate from the New York taxi cab driving academy. And it's like, where are we going with this?
They're bad drivers. They're reckless drivers. That's.
I feel like there's kind of, well, you know, I don't know. I feel like more of a shorthand way to get to that joke.
I agree with you, but Spider-Man's quips are on point. Every episode, he is not only, like, it's just so in character. They work so well. It's the quippiest Spider-Man we've had outside of, like, those other, you know, older cartoons that, like, what else is there?
Yeah.
But, I remember watching this with my friends. I was showing my wife and my buddies Light of the Lizard a couple of years back, and I remember them being like, these are groaners, and I'm like, these are knee slappers. This is the A material, ladies and gentlemen. There's a gag coming up where he talks about him being an urban myth, and I was like, bravo, still plays today as it did in 94.
No notes. We get one of our first views of, I think, outside of the opening credits, of the CG cityscape, which never doesn't look weird. It always looks weird.
It always looked bad, even in 94.
Terrible. Even as a kid, I was like, why are we doing this? What are we?
Yeah.
It's weird. This show didn't benefit from coming out a couple years after Batman the Animated Series. You're like, why? Going back to your point earlier, like, why are the bad guys using laser guns? Is this G.I. Joe?
Right. Yeah, no. Like, people die in Batman the Animated Series from bullet guns.
Yes.
People you meet in the show. And in Spider-Man the Animated Series, it's... Jeez, I don't know, man.
Dude, there's a whole episode of Batman the Animated Series where he runs through a gang. The whole episode is about this, like, It's a Wonderful Life's a gangster, and the gangster's son is, like, addicted to drugs, the drugs he sells, and it's like, whoa, kids are watching, guys.
Yeah. The Underdwellers episode is there's that moment where Batman takes the gun away from the kid. The kid points a gun at Alfred.
Yes.
Amazing. They used to cut that out of rebroadcasts, and I'm like,
I don't doubt
the reason it's in there is because of warning about gun violence. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Anyway,
so the guy's yammering. Spider-Man saves him. The guy's yammering about, like, red eyes, like, it or whatever. And and Spider-Man's just like, this is my favorite Spider-Man line, I think, of this episode. Like, cool, man, just don't let the cops blame me for this.
And it's so, like, boom. Great.
Yeah, within seconds, it's like, this show has a better handling within seconds than the entirety of the MCU Spider-Man. Like, yeah, man, just don't let the cops blame me for this.
Yeah, sure, man, whatever you say.
So Peter's
that's great.
Peter's at the Daily Bugle, and they want him to take photos of the lizard. This is a little confusing. I think what I'm supposed to understand is that Brock is supposed to write the story. Peter's supposed to take the pictures. But somehow it becomes a competition between the two to get this $1,000 bonus, which, like, whoa, look at this version of JJ just throwing around $1,000.
Oh, no, he drops, like, millions. He talks about how, like, they crash a party in another episode. It cost $1 million to fix. I'm like, this dude is loaded.
Yes.
But that's because J. Jonah Jameson is part of J3 News. J. Jonah Jameson, JJJ.
Yeah.
But he has a multimedia empire. He runs a newspaper and a TV station. Like, he has a whole... He's got it on lockdown.
Thank you for that, because you answered a question I was going to have later. Like, what is the Daily Bugle's deal?
Yeah, no, it is like if CNN also had a newspaper. Like, it's just a straight up news empire. But yeah, man, I think that the way it was set up is that Eddie is a photographer too.
Okay.
Eddie and Peter are Eddie got the gig, or maybe he's a double threat. Maybe he's a writer and a photographer, but, like, Eddie is a photographer in his own right. I don't know what the deal is there. But I will say, this show, clearly, I think, because of how many people watch this show, I think this had an insane reach.
Yes.
This will inform people's understanding of Spider-Man mythology to this day.
Yeah.
Straight up. People think that Eddie works for the Daily Bugle because of this cartoon. People think that Eddie Brock was a photographer because of this cartoon. Like, everything they know about Eddie Brock and Venom is from this cartoon. Everything.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool that knowing, in comparing this to Spider-Man 3, this is kind of the way to do Venom, where we're setting up Eddie from episode one. Like,
you should, yeah.
Yeah, like, if we're, because you have to take a little winding road to get to Venom. It's not just like, he's here now.
No, you can't. But, like, yeah, if your goal is Venom, you got to set it up early. Like,
yeah, you got, and so this is
clearly
This is laying the groundwork, but you're right in that not only, and we'll get this into more to be getting later episodes, not only is this show's DNA very clear in the Raimi movies, it's clear in the MCU stuff. Like, when we get to Mysterio and stuff like that, it's like, oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah, no. When we watch the Mysterio episode, I'm like, this is the movie. Like,
yeah. This is the thing. Like, so we set up this rivalry between Peter and Eddie. Also, he's asking for lizards. So, like, did the subway repair guy... What's the time span between Peter leaving Subway Repair Guy, him telling everybody about the lizard, and JJ being like, I need photos of that shit?
I guess at least a day. I mean,
maybe.
The guy isn't dead. So we know he's got a, and he's not being given food or water.
Yeah.
Because he says he's delirious from lack of food.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it's like a 3-day span.
Dude, I love the idea of, like, the lizard, like, hey, what's your order? I'm going to go, as this lizard man, I'm going to go get you some food. I need your help with my device.
Yep. I need your hands.
I need your hands.
So
The first person they're supposed to talk to is Doc Connors. And of course, this is Peter's kind of given this assignment since he already knows Connors. This is how we establish that he knows him from school. And Peter has a better understanding of the science. I have a note here that I will retract later. My note is, I love how economical the animated series is. And later it's like, it could be a little less economical. We kind of blow through a lot.
Yeah, big time.
So Peter fantasizes about how he's going to spend this money, and then he arrives at May's and he sees bills. Classic. This is Spider-Man 101.
That's Spider-Man 2002. Big time.
Yes. Yep. Also, something we'll establish here hello, Winona. Cameo for those watching live. My dog is feeling needy right now. Well, something we'll kind of establish here that becomes part of Spider-Man's DNA moving forward is that Peter's kind of an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He has much more of an edge in this show than in most versions, but it's also, I think Jerry Conway is one of the writers on this. Like, this is Spider-Man. Like, this is who Peter is. Like, Peter
I think that's
a dick sometimes.
Well, and I think that's the thing, because like, that's the, I think the struggle is, the arc, if I were overall of Spider-Man, is that Peter is a selfish person.
Right.
And that's why he struggles with the power and responsibility thing. Yeah. Captain America is not like, responsibility, because he's not a selfish person. Same with Superman. Same with Batman. Batman would literally cut off his right arm for justice if he thought that was going to get the job done.
He'd rather be Batman than Bruce Wayne. Spider-Man would rather be Peter Parker.
Well, and I think that's what makes him relatable, is because we're all kind of, especially when you're young, you're selfish. Oh, yeah. Especially when you're a teenager, you think the whole world revolves around you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So Spider-Man's a dick is what I'm saying. Anyway, he's like, okay, I'm going to get these pictures. He goes to the sewers, and this is where the part you mentioned is like, it's probably an urban legend, says the guy that's literally climbing up the walls, like, bullshit that there's a lizard man.
Yeah, that. He's like, no, that's stupid. I really like that he doesn't immediately buy it.
Yes.
More people are interested, are down for this lizard than Spider-Man.
I think it especially works for a first episode.
Yeah.
Because, like, by season two of any one of these shows, and, like, Lizard Man, you're like, well, probably, considering all the things I've seen. Like, well, yeah.
There's a vampire still floating around.
Like, and literally floating. I don't understand how the flying part works. Nope, he's got genetic bat abilities, but he doesn't have wings. I don't get it.
Yeah, no, it's just he floats.
He's in the sewers, and he sees the footprint. He takes a photo of the footprint. Oh my God, Sal! This joke wrecked me. He says, "I guess I must be myth-taken."
That's the one. It killed my friends and family, and I was like, "No notes. This is
no notes. This is my Spider-Man. Everybody, don't you take it away from me."
Christopher Daniel Barnes, he's stretching every muscle because that joke is hard to pull off. And I think he sells it, but even if he doesn't sell it, he sells that it sucks. Like, it works on every level. And like, later on, you know, when he wants to find Shocker, he'll scream his heart out. Like, this dude can scream. He's subtle. He's funny. He's introspective. He'll cry on command. Like, this guy is a triple threat. Like, he is such a incredible actor in this show.
Well, and I think to your point, I think he at least sells that this is a joke that cracks Peter up.
Right.
Like, he's like,
yeah, these aren't for you. These are for himself.
That would be great if he broke the fourth wall like Deadpool and he was like, I'm not telling these jokes for you, okay?
Yeah,
this is for me.
I am alone. It took me 45 minutes to get here. I have to entertain myself or I'll go friggin' insane.
So after that, he goes to Connor's lab at the college and he runs into Deborah Whitman, who he calls the little sister he never wanted. Who is Deborah Whitman?
Deborah Whitman is an old girlfriend of his during a very narrow window of his history in the 80s. And I remember as a kid going, holy crap, they put Deborah Whitman in the show. Why? Because a really quick summary of Deborah Whitman's history. Deborah Whitman was a girl that Peter casually dated but had no regard for. She had crippling anxiety and self-esteem issues. She suspects, because of Peter's negligence and his date breaking, that he's Spider-Man. She figures it out immediately. And so she is overwhelmed with fear and doubt and self-deprecation. Inevitably, her therapist tells him, Peter Parker, that he has to pretend to be Spider-Man, because otherwise, if she's wrong about him being Spider-Man, it'll destroy her. So he feeds into her neurosis, dresses as Spider-Man, and says, like, yeah, Deb, I'm Spider-Man. And that is what cracks her out of it. And she's like, oh, you doing this reveals to me that you're not Spider-Man and that you're just doing this because, like, I'm a basket case. And then what's even more incredible is when his identity is revealed after Civil War, they do a Return to Deborah Whitten episode where she's like, you ruined my life. You like, and God, it's incredible.
It. God, but, like, damn it.
None of that is in this show. It's just, we needed a character model. Felicia Hardy's in this show, and she is I don't know what you're, they took like, what, 3 seasons for her to become Black Cat? I don't know what their deal is with the women in this show. They got Mary Jane Wright.
Yes.
That's it. Like,
yeah, well, and so does Deborah Whitman. Obviously, we're very early in our rewatch. Does she show up again?
Deborah Whitman is in this show a lot.
Like, okay.
Yeah, no, it's not as much as Felicia shows up or Mary Jane shows up, but Deborah is in the show. And ironically, despite the fact that she's one of the few girlfriends of Peter Parker, never gets together with Peter in the show.
Wild. Yeah, because that was because not knowing the history like you just did, I was like, why not Gwen? Like, why? Yeah, this is clearly like a Gwen.
Peter dates Gwen after college. Like, Gwen is the lab technician who Peter dates during college. That's Gwen.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's like one of the showrunners got the character models wrong, and they were like, "This, like, oh, is this Deborah Whitman?" They're like, "No, that's Gwen Stacy." Well, it says Deborah Whitman on the paper, and I'm never wrong, so it's Deborah Whitman from now on.
It's Deborah Whitman now. So anyway, the little sister you never wanted. Brock is like sneaking around the college, and it's like, I think it's open, dude. I don't know why you're supposed to be interviewing this guy anyway. I don't know why you're like sneaking around.
No, he got bilked out of the Peter's supposed to interview him, and Brock's like, nah, well, if Peter Parker has to interview him, I'm gonna get other information about this Doc Connors as soon as I can. Like, Peter has the authority to go to interview Doc Connors. If Brock's there too, Peter's gonna be like, yo, Brock, what are you doing here, man? I got the assignment. Like, F off. Like, it's, but he's also meant to be like sneaky, and we're supposed to show to children that like he is duplicitous and not.
He's duplicitous. I do like, we'll get in this later episodes, how like Brock is kind of a dick, but Spider-Man really does. He at least at the point we're at in the show, he doesn't do anything wrong. Like,
no, he Spider-Man takes like a little bit of psychopathic glee in giving Brock a hard time. I kind of would too, and I think that's what makes Spider-Man so relatable. Like, Brock is a dick, but like, so are you, Peter. Like,
yeah, so are you, Peter. This is a little bit of a Cobra Kai, Karate Kid 1 situation, right, where it's like, who's the bully? Yeah. They go to Connor's lab, and the lizard's there. Oh my God, who could it be? And he's taking something concealed in this tarp, and Spider-Man's like, what have you done to Dr. Connors? And I'm like, come on, Peter. Come on, man.
You know what it is? I think that's brilliant. I've seen it. Now that I'm aware of it, I see it in every cartoon where, like, shows are one step behind the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the audience is like, that's obviously not a body under that thing. And I know the lizard is Doc Connors. So, like, why won't Spider-Man catch up to me? So when Spider-Man reveals it, you as the viewer think you're smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's such a brilliant writing convention. It also is, like, really messed up and weird, but what the hell, Peter? Although I do like that sequence where he like, he protects her, he gets his suit up, and then she's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh right, he like forgets himself for a minute, like, I went into Spider-Man mode, and there's a person behind me, I can't just reveal Spider-Man.
Oh shit, yeah, okay, all right, everything's fine, don't worry about it. They flirt a little bit, classic. So now we get a flashback, which it's weird, a flashback in the first episode, wild. We see Peter working with Connors as he regrows a limb of a mouse using lizard DNA, and again, it's like, fucking Peter, catch up, dude.
Yeah.
You of all people should know, like, animal combining with Peter, unintended consequences. And I love this line. I love this line from Connors. You're like, well, all you need is like a few strands of DNA and the neogenic recombinator. I'm like, I think you're underselling the magical technology you need to. You're just like, right? Oh, you just need this.
So really,
$30 million device.
Yeah, that neogenic. I will come to hate the neogenic recombinator and everything it stands for. It is the source of so much frustration and anger. Across this show, I'm just like, enough with the neogenic recombinator.
They were proud of themselves of that name, and I got to think they did a little bit of their homework, because not once did I type in recombinator and the document was like, this word doesn't exist. No, it's like, nope, yes, correct. And I was like, cool. I don't know why. We'll just, I'm not going to look it up. We're just going to keep rolling.
Yeah, no. Neogenic reconnaissance.
So Lizard runs to this building that has like the Connors name on the side, but it's like a complex of multiple buildings. It's like, well, do the Connors own this whole area? How much money is Dr. Connors pulling down as a professor at this college?
He's got a sweet brownstone. I don't know.
Yeah. So Connors' wife and kids are cooking. Spider-Man arrives, and he's the one. They're like, and it's not the Lizard. It's Spider-Man.
I like that a lot. That was a fun moment because it also establishes Spider-Man's like hierarchy in the superhero community. In the beginning, you're just like, oh, is this a vacuum? Then you find out no. But also,
no, it is not. Yes, there's a line coming soon that lived with me to my adulthood.
Same. Yeah. Same.
So the Lizard is spying them, and I guess Brock is too, because again, he's just being a weird pervy freak. And the Lizard attacks Brock. We get in a big spider Lizard fight. It's really cool. Spider-Man takes a picture of Lizard and then immediately, like, unforced error, like, drops the camera.
Yeah, I love that too, because you could tell like the writers of that show are like, oh man, we're like, because Spider-Man at this point is neck deep in clones continuity and like history, and so like it's been a long time since Spider-Man has just needed to take photos for cash. Yeah. And it's really cool to see him just be like, hold that pose. Like, he immediately is like, I need $1,000. Like, oh, it's the Lizard, he's real. Oh my god, I'm taking a picture of you. Doesn't even like, he could, if he wasn't so blinded by greed, put together that Connors is the Lizard in that moment. Yeah. But he's so like, because later, of course, the idea of outing the Lizard as Connors is the moral dilemma of the episode.
Yeah.
So, but he doesn't even think about that. He's like, I'm taking a picture of this Lizard in a lab coat with a name tag on it.
Yeah, he's got the name tag on the lab.
I
wonder who
the
Lizard could be.
I don't know. Hard to tell. And he also has the same voice, but whatever.
Yeah. A doctor, fucking Scarecrow running around with the Dr. Crane name badge. He's like, ah, fuck. Who could the Scarecrow be?
Who could it be? I don't know.
Who could it be? So the Spider-Man's like, when am I going to get a handle on being a superhero and a photographer at the same time? Never, Peter.
Never.
And then we hear, no, daddy, stop. And Spider-Man's like, daddy? Did I hear right? Did he say daddy?
Yeah.
For some reason, that line was super funny to me. So it turns out the Connors family knew that Kurt was transforming into a Lizard Man, and I guess they just hoped it would all work out. They're like, well, we'll just keep this to ourselves, and it'll work itself out.
Well, people started going missing, and they're like, oh, geez, this is bad for me, but I don't want to lose this zip code, so let's just keep it on the hush-hush, okay? Couple of sewer executives, whatever, we're fine.
Yeah, as long as TV execs work in the sewer now, nobody's going to miss them. As long as the checks keep clearing from the college, all right? That's all that matters.
I couldn't care less. And neither should is it Martha Connors with her...
I don't know.
With her cardigan and like, like she is just super wasp.
Spidey agrees to keep this secret for reasons that are not entirely clear. I guess because he's got his own secrets. He's like, well, people shouldn't be held accountable
for their actions. Like, no,
period.
That is Spider-Man. He's like, all right, you know, because it's like, yeah, it'll ruin this family. Like,
yeah.
Right now, one guy's missing. We'll get him back. If he's not dead, then all's good.
Listen, no harm, no foul. Exactly. I do like the Marvel heroes, especially, but all superheroes are like, the second they brush against even the notion of accountability, they're like, wait, hold on a second. That's a whole plot of Civil War. It's like Captain America's like, well, accountability, hold on, slow your roll a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I feel bad for Cap, because in that case, he should have just been like, we used to have accountability, and it was really annoying. Like, we had to deal with, like, we were dispatched to places we shouldn't have gone, and we weren't given authority to do that, but Mark Miller didn't read those comics, so whatever.
Yeah. And also, going to the movie version, it's like, yeah, everybody's like, oh, how did Scarlet Witch end up that way? It's like, well, from the jump, nobody was like, yeah, you just do your thing, and we're not gonna, you're gonna turn the Hulk into a murderous monster that, like, kills a bunch of people in Africa. We don't worry about that. You blew up some people, again, in Africa. Listen, don't worry about it. No wonder Wanda was like, well, I guess I can do whatever I want and it's okay. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about. Spidey agrees to keep the secret, and then he hears Brock is writing it all down. Like, he senses that Brock is like gonna tell his story. So he webs up Brock. While he's doing that, the Lizard goes back and kidnaps his wife. This episode's wild. Now Spider-Man has to go into the sewer to find the lizard. And this is a line. This is more than literally anything else in the series. For some reason, this line stuck with me. And I think it's probably because as a kid, it melted my brain. So, which is weird because, like, Spider-Man, we talked about Spider-Man and his amazing friends. And Spider-Man, it's not like this is the first cartoon where Spider-Man has hung out with other characters.
No.
But what he says is, why can't it be one of those galaxy-hopping heroes? You don't see the Fantastic Four in the sewers or the Avengers. He even says, not even the Defenders. Well, maybe the Hulk.
Maybe the Hulk.
And this is,
and I love that.
Like, yeah. Right off the bat, it's like, hey, this is part of a wider universe. Boom.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's I think it's because Avi Arad has been working on this. Like, he's from toy man to TV executive. Like, this dude has been trying to get, and Marvel has, at least since the 80s, if not earlier, fancied themselves Disney. Like, yeah. They legitimately, like, at the executive level, considered themselves a Disney competitor.
Yeah.
And it was not, if only we weren't dealt a bad hand, if only we could just get a foothold in the media, we would be rivaling Disney in terms of our success. And they had, and the synergy of, like, we have this other Fantastic Four cartoon, we're working on an Avengers cartoon, they were developing, and there's like a pilot, or at least the intro of a Captain America cartoon. Like, they are, there's a Hulk cartoon. Yeah. They're rolling out with these shows, and they're like, look, we may never cross them all over, but if you watch them, it'll be like they're all part of the same universe.
Yeah, because there are, and we're not even close to them, but there are some, nothing like Avengers level, whatever, but like,
no,
there is some bleed over, especially we get the X-Men later.
Got the X-Men, Iron Man goes into the show. Yep. I mean, like, Iron Man appears in the Hulk cartoon. Hulk appears in an Iron Man cartoon.
And that Iron Man cartoon is wild.
It is crazy. That show is bonkers.
Yeah, it's
if you've never seen it, you should watch it.
Yeah, it's based off like the Forceworks era, and it's like, what?
Like, why? Yeah. And it's like, because the comic books are coming out at the same time.
Yeah.
Buy them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when it's just, and as a kid, I didn't understand. It's not until later you're like, well, that's wild that was the era. Because watching that cartoon, I'm like, well, this is basically what the Avengers are. And I was like, nope, incorrect.
As a quick tangent, I will say that, like, I was spoiled, and I don't know what it's like now. But as a kid, like, I remember when everything that I watched or consumed, everything that I read or consumed became a thing.
Yeah.
So I just assumed that, like, everything got its turn, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, there's a Spider-Man cartoon.
Yeah.
I read The Tick, there's a Tick cartoon. Mm-hmm. I read Big Guy and Rusty, there's a Big Guy and Rusty cartoon. Like, obviously, everything gets a shot.
Yes.
Everything is going to have a show. Like, there's a Wildcats cartoon. You know, like, everything I watch in Spawn, mm-hmm. and there's a movie. Like, everything will eventually get its turn. And it's like, no!
No, and you know, it was not that way. It wasn't even close to that. Now you're at a point where pretty much every Marvel character might get a turn. Like, I think we're a couple years away from like a Dark Hawk Disney Plus show.
Dude, yeah, and it'll be real crappy.
Yeah, it'll be real bad. It'll be real bad. So listen, we want to do a Dark Hawk show, but it can't be like anything else. Period.
It can't be like Dark Hawk.
Yeah, so it has
and
to be.
Could it also be about a region that the director's from?
Yes. Fuck, man. They keep doing interviews from the guy, the showrunner of Moon Knight. And
why are they doing that?
Every one of them, I want to post that meme of the guy from there. He's like, he admitted. It's like every single one. I pitched it as like Ghostbusters meets the Mummy. And you're like, wait, first off, do those go together? And second off, for Moon Knight?
Yeah. No, Disney sent me a picture of Echo, and they were like, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
everything gets a turn. Everything gets a turn. And listen, I will say she is the focus of the best episode of Hawkeye. So
Yes, she is.
That's all I'll say about that. And Daredevil's probably going to show up in it. So
I hope so.
Okay, so we're in the sewers. We've now revealed that not only do the Fantastic Four and the Avengers exist, but the Defenders exist. And when I say the Defenders, I mean Hulk, Doctor Strange, Silver Surfer Defenders.
Yes, that Defenders! I'm like, oh my god, wow, what an implication.
Yes, yes. So Spider-Man explains, to himself that he is scared because because Connors can hurt him, but he's not able to hurt Connors because Connors is his friend. This exposition is very sweaty. It's like, hey, for the kids at home, yeah. by the way, this is the emotional thing Spidey's dealing with right now.
This is the comic books. Normally this would be a thought balloon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that exposition for me is like that's 1-to-1.
Well,
like,
and that is
this is what they do.
That is a very good point because going to the Batman animated series comparison, that is turning Batman, which is honestly I think why I think Batman has the best adaptations overall, because it's always kind of a blank slate for whoever's doing it to do their version of the thing. And so they take it to they made it like the Superman Fleischer cartoons and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. This is, like you're saying, is more like this is the comic put on your screen. Like this is the thing. Good, bad, warts and all, this is the thing.
That's right. That's why I think like this is a great gateway show for the cartoons or for the comic books, because it's preparing you. Like you are aware of what this is, and you're not like, it's why people have such a hard time reading Batman comics if they came from any other media. Mm-hmm. They'd be like this ain't like the show or the movies, and it's like, no, it's not. Yeah. It's not at all.
Yeah.
Whereas Spider-Man the animated series, like, this is exactly like the comic book, or this is exactly like the cartoon, only actually a little bit more adult oriented and better. Like, yeah.
So, and classic Spidey moment. He's like, the worst part is I helped Doc with his experiments. If it wasn't for me, it's like, dude, fuck it. You need to talk to a therapist, my guy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You weren't even in the room when he did the experiment on himself. You are in the clear.
Yeah.
So he saves the subway worker who, as we talked about earlier, Connors needed his hands. He needed his little baby fingies.
Yeah.
So Connors lays out his entire plan to his wife. He needs help to operate the device. He had the subway guy, but the subway guy, I guess, was getting sleep deprived and hungry and just wasn't able to.
He's like, I got too hungry. Like, that's what he says.
So and his whole plan is to use the electrical cables in the sewer system to send the waves through the city and turn everybody into lizard people.
I guess that's been his plan the whole damn time. That movie is not terribly far-fetched now.
Yep, I was just thinking the same thing. Setting aside the using the power lines to do this, it's like, okay, so like you were saying, this show echoes into eternity. This show is Gladiator. It echoes into eternity.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so... All right, I guess this is the lizard's bit. I'm sorry, yeah. Amazing Spider-Man 1.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, I guess we're all taking the piss for no reason, mm-hmm. because this is what he does.
Could you do a lizard story where he's just eating people?
I mean, like, that is the best lizard story.
Yes.
It's the Todd McFarlane one. Yeah. He's just eating people and being puppeted by Calypso.
Yeah, cool. All right, because I was just like, yeah, the guy turns himself into a lizard person, starts eating people. We need to stop that. That's all you need. That's it.
He's scary.
He is like, scary. and then you've already got the stakes. You don't even need to lay out the other stuff. It's like, well, lizards eat spiders in the real world. So I obviously, even a child brain, I'm like, well, yeah, this is a threat. This is something I should be worried about.
Exactly.
Okay, so... then she asks him about Billy, and Lizard gets a moment where he seems to genuinely need to be reminded about Billy. So we're implying that like Lizard brain is taking over. So it's okay that his plan is nonsense, because it's like, okay, things aren't working.
He's not playing with a full deck. Yeah, exactly.
So Spidey swings in, they fight. This is actually a pretty fucking cool fight.
Dope looking fight.
I will say, as somebody that is catching up on My Hero Academia, which is a show I enjoy, it's the only anime show I watch fairly regularly. I'm waiting for the next dubs, Hulu. This is a very anime, like Spider-Man swings in and he has to think about like his entire existence during the fight. Like, what is the meaning of the Recombinator and what it means for the whatever?
I know.
It looks dope though. Like when it's in the sewer water and the whole thing, it's like, man, you knew this was the first episode. You spent a little extra money here.
They sure did. No, that's the thing, is that the problem is that's the standard now. I'm like, I want this show to look like this all the time. Yeah. And it never will.
It never will. Sorry, everybody. And so he uses the Recombinator to save Connors, and he gets his photo. It should be noted, as we pointed out earlier, that Connors is not, Lizard's not only wearing a lab coat, he's wearing an ID badge that says Kurt Connors on it, one presumes. And so I don't, the photo, I don't know, maybe the quality, it is newsprint, so maybe you can't read it, but I was like, that might be a good, in today's day and age, in the world of Enhance, we'd be able to figure out who it is.
They would immediately, yeah. But for now, it's everyone gets what they need. Spider-Man gets the $1,000 bonus, yep, which pays off Aunt May's debts. Connors gets to keep his dark secret.
Which will never come back to haunt anybody.
No.
Mission accomplished. Day is saved.
That's right.
And then Brock takes Jonah to the Connors home, hoping, I guess, that like when he knocks, the lizard will answer.
Right. That he'll be a lizard. Yeah.
Good job, Brock. Good on you. And he's like, listen, if it's not the lizard, I'm going to eat this paper. And then when it's not, J. Jonah Jameson's like, oh, you want it cooked or raw? Which, again, I must have watched this episode so many times because I have that scene burned into my brain.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Yeah.
Episode ends with the way every Spider-Man thing needs to end, with Spider-Man swinging through the city. And he talks about being caught in Spider-Man's web. Something. I didn't know. Aunt May's like, why are you hanging out with that Spider-Man? And he's like, I'm caught in his web of the web. We're in web. Whatever. He's Spider-Man.
Right. Webs.
Webs.
Whatever.
You get it.
We get it.
So now going into our second episode for this episode. Second cartoon episode for the episode. You get it. Episode 2, The Spider Slayer, which originally aired in February 4th, 1995. So a few months later. Mm-hmm. Synopsis is Norman Osborn hires Spencer Smythe, to capture Spider-Man. So we start off with more CG City. Spider-Man swinging around, and he talks about helps clear the cobwebs. Yeah, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Spidey is chased down by these drone things, which reminded me immediately of the drones from Venom, because they're basically just missiles with robot brains, I guess.
Yeah, and cameras that can immediately send information from them to a central location. No, those drones are fun. I remember just being like, oh, wow, we're hitting the ground running.
Yeah.
No bullshit in this episode. Just here's the drones. Boom.
Dude, and that's something I like about animated shows, where it's like, I guess because kids, you need to get the action. You want to hold their attention. But it's just like, ah, fuck it. We're in it. It's action scene.
Yep.
You'll figure out why we're here in a couple minutes. Just get it rolling.
Sure. Yeah.
So he's chasing down these drones. He throws them around. It's funny because he calls them toys. And even though these, because they're too small, never existed as toys, the Spider Slayers, we will soon discover is three Spider Slayers. I definitely own those toys. And that is 100% why this is the second episode.
Exactly. Well, then that's why I keep bringing up Avi Arad, toy man, yes, and owner, or at least CEO of Toy Biz,
mm-hmm,
which owns Marvel at this time. So yeah, like
it's so
gross.
It's
so gross. You're just like, oh, this episode is an action figure commercial.
Yes.
Like, and let me tell you, like, those action figures rolled out around, if not before, the launch of the cartoon.
Yeah.
So like, a lot of people remember their first Spider-Man figures being from this show.
100%, which is why we're getting a whole wave now that like harkens back to them, like a retro wave. And I will say, in its defense, most of the cartoons I grew up with were toy ads. He-Man, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Ninja Turtles, toy ads.
Yeah, they're all action figure commercials. And so why not Spider-Man?
Hey, why not? And I get why we're doing this, because it's not like he's Batman. See, Batman has the Batwing, the Batplane, the Batmobile, the Bat whatever. Spider-Man doesn't have that, doesn't need it. So I guess like spider enemy
villains.
Robots. Yeah.
Yeah.
Spidey defeats them, and we see that Osborn has paid Smythe to build them. This is our introduction to the Smythes, senior and junior. We've got Spencer Smythe, who is the adult. Oh, I guess they're both adults. The father. And Alistair Smythe, who is the younger. And question for you, Sal, do they have different accents?
Yeah, they straight up do.
I think
Spencer's English and Alistair is Australian.
Yeah, okay. I was like, time out. Hold on. Hold on.
Yeah, they just straight up sound like they're from two different regions, which, you know, I mean, on one hand, accents are not genetic. Someone should have told George Lucas, but I noticed it this time.
Yes.
Though, apparently, the guy who played Alistair was from England, so I don't know why, but he sounds not.
Yeah, he
like
sounds Australian.
Yeah, he sounds Australian.
Wild. Maybe they got.
I'll never forget it. Yeah. Like that's Norman Osborn. Norman Osborn.
I mean, that is the most memorable thing about Smythe is his voice. It is wild. But like, again, as a kid, I was like, oh, Smythe must be really important. No, nobody cares about Smythe.
Not
Smythe
even
does
a little
not matter.
Bit. No, it's so funny. You're like, man, like the second and third episodes are about Spider Slayers.
Yeah.
And it's like, Spider Slayers are a footnote. They're so inconsequential to Spider-Man's history. They are villains. They are recurring villains. But who cares?
Yes.
And it's like, you know who cares? People who need to toyify this show.
Yep. And we get our first toy. We get the Black Widow, because this is before, not before Black Widow, the character existed, but before her branding mattered.
Anyone cared. Yeah.
We also get in this episode, we get Felicia Hardy, who's planning some sort of like charity ball thing with Jameson.
Jennifer Hale.
Yeah. Robbie gives this bit of sweaty exposition about like Felicia's the daughter of these important donors. So she's rich.
I love that.
Felicia, by the way, is fucking great in this episode.
Amazing. She has so much agency. I'm like, wow, what a really interesting female character she ended up being. Maybe informed my interest in women. I don't know. The subtext of which we can get into half hours, but let's try to focus on that.
Yeah. I will say, big fan of Felicia Hardy for two reasons. Growing up as a kid, one, episodes like this, where it's like, man, she's kind of sassy. She's got personality into it. Also, I was a child in the 90s. And if anybody's seen Black Cat's costume in the 90s, it made a very strong impression upon me as a young man. Let's just leave it at that.
Right. Unfortunately, she doesn't become Black Cat for two seasons.
Doesn't. And not unfortunately, entirely understandably, her costume is a little bit more conservative in the cartoon.
More demure.
Yes, that's fine.
Although I will say, more comic accurate to the original incarnation anyway, so it's not like they didn't cover her in armor and her some kind of different thing. Like, I was so convinced as a kid, because I was always like trying to, you know, outthink these shows.
Yeah.
That Felicia was Black Cat the whole time, and that was how they got their fortune. But, you know, like, there was going to be this big reveal that she was the Black Cat. No.
Mm-hmm. Nope. And also, like, we're way ahead of herself. They give her, like, powers, which I think isn't kind of in the comics, but also, like,
she
weird.
Does have powers, but not like that. Yeah. They made her, like, bigger. Like, it's stupid.
Anyway.
Like, this.
Anyway. Yeah. And something I should mention is, and I'm pretty sure in the first episode, nobody has pupils. In this episode, they start getting pupils. Good choice. It was weird in the first episode. Now everybody starts looking a little bit more human. Into it.
Uh-huh.
So Jonah needs to get a photographer for this event. Of course, we know somebody. He's like, I'll give you my best photographer. And he crosses his fingers behind his back like he's six.
I don't know what that's about. Like, does that info, like, you know, I don't, well, I'm a newsman. I don't lie. I don't know. It's really weird.
I guess it's also for like kids from the 50s where that was a thing.
That is what this is, because there'll be a later season episode where J. Jonah Jameson puts on a trench coat and hat and becomes a private eye for no reason. And it's like, who is this for?
Javier Arred. That's who it's
fans
all
of the
for.
Freaking Shadow. What are you doing?
So he's got. He gets this photographer. It's Parker. They know each other from college. They flirt a little bit. Yeah. And it is weird getting this. It's weird that we've not been able to crack Felicia in the movies. Like, technically she shows up in Amazing Spider-Man 2, but it's like, yeah, why is this not something we've explored more? She's such a good character.
No. I know. I'm hoping the next trilogy, the opener is Felicia.
Too bad. Like, we're going to get her in the Madam Web movie.
Oh, no. By the way, really quick, Incursions means we could kill every Sony movie ever.
What? Elaborate on Incursions.
Incursions are the plot device of Secret Wars from 2015 in Marvel Comics, where like universes are smashing into each other, too many universes, and they're all blasting into each other, too many universes, you know, like universes with Morbiuses and Venoms stuff. I mean, you know, I'm just saying,
just throwing it out there,
Sony can go nuts. Go ahead, make all the stupid stories you want, because at the end of the next Endgame, they're all going
away. Marvel saving up its pennies to buy you out. So we go to a lab where we see acid drilling into Black Widow, and we're very sweatily informed that that is the only thing that will get through its Pierce armor. So it turns out Brock, going to walk back a little bit my point, that Brock doesn't do anything wrong in these episodes. It's a sloppy plan, and also it's anybody with any two cents will be like, well, this is a crime. We're committing
this is
a
illegal.
Crime.
Yeah, no. Well, so what we did, okay, so what we're doing is, as captain of industry and entrepreneurs ourselves, we're going to send giant robots into an urban metropolitan area and murder a man whose identity we don't know.
Yes.
That's the plan. We got the news here to keep it on the up and up.
Exactly, because that is Spencer's thing. He's like, well, I needed the news here, specifically Eddie Brock.
Transparency.
It's like, all right, guy. I mean, whatever helps you sleep at night.
Right, and then they smash Jameson's house, and it's like,
whoopsies. And it's also revealed that Spencer's doing this to get his son like a Professor X wheelchair, and it's like, I think a wheelchair, I know we're all wheeling him around like he's an invalid, but like, I don't know if that, I just said that, and I was like, I don't know if that's the appropriate, I don't want to, I don't know if that's problematic. The point is, his arms work, he can roll himself.
He's jacked.
Yes.
He also clearly gives himself his own haircuts, but like, I will say that I think that the chair is supposed to be some kind of like incubator, because like, you know, obviously he's going to become the action figure of Alistair Smythe.
Oh, that's right.
But I think, because he says, you know, the accident was my fault. I guess the idea is that, like, it's not just a cool hover chair. It also will, like, eventually fix your legs.
Yeah, because he does say that the goal, he mentions later that his father's goal was to fix his legs. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure. Whatever.
So Osborn, because there's not enough heavy lifting for this single episode to do, Osborn goes to Fisk's lair. And by the way, shout out to Roscoe Lee Brown, who is the voice of Kingpin, doing great work, iconic work, work that like is, this is probably still the Kingpin's voice in my brain.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yep. I do love our guy in the MCU right now, but Roscoe Lee Brown, man, is incredible. Yeah. His Wilson Fisk will never be outdone.
So he's the one. So he is financing this because Osborn owes him a debt.
Yeah. It gets really complicated. It's for a children's cartoon. First episode, fight the lizard. He's not the lizard. The end.
Yeah.
In this one, it's like, okay, so it's like friggin' Attack of the Clones. Yeah. We're gonna get one guy to get another guy to get a guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, why? So yeah, Osborn works for Fisk. Osborn owes Fisk a favor. Fisk wants Spider-Man dead. So he subcontracts from Oscorp. Oscorp strong arms the Smythes into building Spider Slayers. That's
because like, apparently, what? Like a gun, we can't just hire a guy with a gun.
No, I need them to build huge, intricate monster weapons. Maybe it's because they're evil strategists who are like, no, I'll also, once they kill Spider-Man, people will see the military applications and we'll sell Spider Slayers.
Or Spider Slayers.
Rolling over the Middle East. Like,
or they'll be like, or no, once this, the clearly the Spider Slayers will be the next big thing, and then we'll sell the toys.
Right, well, that's easily what they do, because you can buy all three of them and snap them all together into one big...
Obviously. Also, we've got money to burn, because Kingpin brings up a whole holographic version of Earth for no... He's like, just my operations, Earth. And then that comes up, and then he's like, they're all over, and I'm like, well, did you need the hologram? You could have just said,
right,
global, I'm global, but whatever.
Yeah, you could have just said that, but you don't need the visual aid, we get it.
I do kind of like... I think Kingpin works on a lot of levels. Because I think throughout all comics, he's the most iconic, just normal criminal bad guy. I know Batman has like Rupert Thorne and Falcone and all that stuff, but like Kingpin is
about him.
The guy. I do kind of like the idea of like, no, Kingpin runs a global network, criminal network. He's not just New York guy. It's like, oh, that's a cool. I think that's kind of cool, especially if he's fighting Spider-Man, who's got a little bit more pull than Daredevil.
Totally. No, I agree. Yeah.
Anyway, so we're at the event, and fuck, if we're not, again, we're just shotgunning so many characters in this episode. We reveal that Felicia's dating Flash. Harry is there too. Kind of doesn't matter. Peter arrives with his aunt. I think it's cute. Felicia thinks it's cute. She gets all moody for Peter. Peter fucking slays in these episodes. Like,
This dude has a goal, and he is gonna accomplish it.
Yeah, he is pulling way above his weight with these ladies.
Yeah.
So Flash bounces with Harry, and he decides that he's gonna dress up as Spider-Man.
Yes, which is an adaptation of a classic, one of the early Ditko Lee stories, where Flash Thompson is pissed at Spider-Man for getting the eye of Liz Allen, and so he pretends to be Spider-Man to scare Peter Parker, and instead Dr. Doom captures him.
Oh my god.
And Spider-Man has to rescue him. It's amazing. It's a great one because in the sequence Flash is hiding behind a Huck Finn-esque like picket fence, and then Dr. Doom grabs him. Like, Dr. Doom is in Queens in his full regalia.
Yes.
It's great.
It sounds not as threatening the way you describe it, but just in general, I would be much rather be kidnapped by the Spider Slayers than Dr. Doom. Doom, there's a pretty good chance I'm not getting out of this.
That's right. No, but it's one of those things where this show and like adaptations, good adaptations, make you think of the thing it came from, but not even necessarily remember where it came from. Like the idea of Flash Thompson dressing as Spider-Man to give Peter Parker a hard time is something that should have been in the movies. It should have been in everything. Like, we should have seen that, because it's one of those things where you go, like, what a cool, what a fun, what an annoying thing to have happened in this story that, like, I feel like definitely would happen in these scenarios. And then you go, like, oh, it's actually informed by its, like, origins. It's like issue four. Like, it's that early on. But in this, it's on a grander scale, spider slayers and whatnot. But,
It still works. It is. I do wish maybe we'd set up Flash before this. I will also say, you bringing up the stories and all that stuff, I think Spider-Man, more than almost any other character except maybe the X-Men, benefits from the serialized storytelling that you just really can't accomplish with movies. Like, because of the supporting cast, because of the villains. Like, I think the closest might be like a Batman, but Batman, most of the iconic marquee DC characters are so mythic that it's kind of like, there's not, you pull more from the idea of the characters than necessarily specific stories, except if it's Long Halloween, because then every Batman movie needs to adapt you in some way or form or fashion.
Apparently.
But Spider-Man, and so it's like, it's cool. I'm glad that we're here now watching this, because I think Spider-Man, more than any other character, benefits from this type of storytelling, because you get to have stories with Flash, and you get to have stories with Felicia, and you get to do all the things, and there's so many things to do.
Yes, and one of the things that I think was encumbering it, the reason why people even immediately associate these characters with movies, is because of the budgets. Yeah. And it just wasn't possible to make a show adaptation of any superhero that had any sort of power set. Just it's impossible without taking so many liberties that it's no longer the character.
Yeah.
But with today's world, you could just go, we don't need to make disappointing Spider-Man sequels. We can just make a 6 or 12 episode Spider-Man show where every episode is like a little has the equivalent of a movie would have been in it. Because it's like, I remember as a kid when they announced that Sandman was going to be the villain of Spider-Man 3. And I was like, what a waste of time.
Yeah.
Like, because Sandman is a throwaway villain. He's not great. He's not iconic. He's iconic in as much as, like, you can't beat that silhouette. But, like, outside of that, who cares? The point of Sandman is he's so dumb, Spider-Man beats him with a vacuum cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
That's a TV plot. That's a comic book plot. Yeah. That ain't a $250 million plot.
Yeah. Well, and especially if you went the angle of, like, the BBC Sherlock show, where it's basically each season's, like, three movies, essentially.
Yeah,
and you're talking about with the budget, I'm currently watching Halo, which overall is a show I'm enjoying. That is a show on Paramount Plus, which as far as I know is not, I guess they have CBS money, which is the biggest network, but it's not like
all the Star Trek shows. It's not like the Star Trek shows are cheap.
I'm saying. I'm watching Halo, and at least once an episode, they pull a like movie caliber, like stuff that we saw in Game of Thrones and we lost our minds over. They're like doing like once a week, and you're like,
yeah,
what? This is where we're at now.
Totally. No, it's why we're so critical of the Disney Plus shows, because it's like, you've got the Mandalorian room, you have the Disney bucks. I don't understand why this looks like shit.
Yes. Give Moon Knight a practical costume. Anyway, whatever.
They'll have to, man. They'll have to in Blade or something.
I don't know. Blade. God, it's like behind the scenes on Blade, and it's Mahershala Ali in one of those mocap shoots. It's like, why? It's just
Damn
a trench
it.
Coat. It's just a trench coat.
It's a
coat.
Dude in a suit. What are you talking about, man?
It's
that's
just a trench coat. Anyway, I know we don't like the Sony stuff, but I wouldn't mind seeing Blade crossover with Morbius just to see Mahershala Ali kill Jared Leto's Morbius.
Well, that'll be amazing.
Anyway, sorry, we're way off the rails. So he dresses up as Flash, dresses up as Spider-Man. Felicia kisses a Peter, which feels a bit sudden, but that's fine.
It was very forward. I remember being like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, that was sudden. Yeah, but she's like, you know what? I own it. Yeah. I'm not attached. I don't care.
I don't give a shit. I'm a free woman. Flash arrives as Spidey, and he's like, I actually really like this exchange a lot, because he's
so
kind of like, you take these pictures of me, I don't like it. And of course, Peter immediately is like, well,
he's like,
yeah, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, that's not what I want you to say. Okay, what do you want me to say? And then Flash spots the spider slayer, he screams, and so Peter, and again, this is the voice actor for Peter, so great. He's like, what are we doing?
That is such a that is as good as anything else. It's so good. It works so well. It's solid character work.
Bummer we never got in a movie, but at least we get it here.
At least we get it here.
As you mentioned, part of our plan is that the Spider Slayer is going to mess up J. Jonah Jameson's penthouse, because we find out later this is Jameson's place.
Right, is his house that he uses as a, which I guess is like he's cheap. He's Mr. Moneybags, but also he's like, oh, I'll pull double duty. I got a really nice big hall in my house. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, he is Donald Trump, where it's like supposedly your whole bit is you've got so much money, but also you were the cheapest motherfucker on the planet.
That is so J. Jonah Jameson, yes. Right? Like that's gotta be. I love that. Yeah, he's in charge of Marvel. Like mm-hmm. that's the joke, right? It's like, hey, how many pencil top erasers are we using here? Don't quit making so many mistakes. That costs us money.
Exactly. Spider-Man, it appears to be kid captured by the Black Widow.
Right. Brock
unmasked Spider-Man on live TV, which again, how is he on live TV with nobody knowing? How is he how does JJ not know? What network is he on? What's happening?
Yeah. Now he's on the J3 news program.
Cool.
Like CNN, but with more J's.
Cool. So it's the wrong Spider-Man, of course. It's Flash underneath. A bunch of foot soldiers storm in. And basically
Kingpin's
like...
Kingpin's men, yeah.
Yeah, they're Kingpin's henchmen, but they look like foot soldiers like from Cobra Commander or something.
Yeah. No, they got a whole... They got a theme. They got colors. They got helmets. It's great.
I should look up whether those are action figures. I'm sure they are.
They should be, but I don't know if they are. I don't remember if they made them.
For the army builders at home. And so one of the soldiers I'm sorry. I like Brock here. He's kind of like, excuse me, sir, what are you doing here? It's like the situation has changed, Brock. You're not just like man on the street eating these guys, like
yeah. Well, he's hustling. That's a noble profession, I guess.
It makes me want. Suddenly, I want Billy Eichner to be Brock in one of these movies for his like man on the street stuff.
Excuse me, sir, for a dollar.
So one of the soldiers knocks the camera down. Brock's like, I've got First Amendment rights. And the soldier's like, we just amended them.
Solid.
Real Spider-Man shows up as May and Jonah are watching the news. J. Jonah Jameson's like, of course, that's the real one. I can practically smell him at this point, which is probably true. He was just in the sewer an episode
right.
ago.
Yeah.
I don't know how much dry cleaning that suit needs to get that smell out. Like, he fell in the water.
Dry cleaning.
He fell in the water.
He fell in the water.
Gross.
Twice.
Yeah. Spider-Man goes to save Flash. He's like, talk about dramatic irony. How does Peter know where to go?
Right. How does he know where to go? I think that Brock mentions where it is, but it could be that, I mean, if we're gonna retcon it and just make it up, I mean, Brock's cameraman did not sign up for this. So he called J3 ahead of time,
he's like, hey.
Got Robbie, and he's like, dude, Brock dragged me down here. He said that there was going to be like a human interest story. I'm now here witnessing, like, I'm going to be witnessing like an assassination on TV.
Yeah.
Like a public execution. I didn't sign up for this. I don't get hazard pay.
Yeah.
You got to send somebody down here to get me.
So Spider-Man shows up, starts taking out Fisk goons. By the way, the goons are super cavalier for who they work for. They're like, oh, what do you think Mr. Fisk is going to think about this? Like, guys, this is how you get thrown into crocodile pits. This is you're going to get a laser blast through the head. You need to tighten up, all right?
Yeah, and yet, despite their loose lips, we don't find out, or they don't fully, our main characters don't find out Wilson Fisk is the Kingpin for a while.
For a good long time. The goons ask where the activation button is for the Widow, which I guess is just a push and play.
Big button.
Yes.
It runs on artificial intelligence.
Spider-Man tries to take it out with a steel girder. They're fighting. Everyone escapes. All the people involved escape except Spencer, who Osborn coerces into like staying to finish the job. He's like, remember.
Yeah.
Our deal.
Remember the deal. No spider slat, no hover chair. I love the voices, and Osborn is great.
Yes.
Frustrating that he is second Goblin,
you know,
in the series. I heard there was a reason for that, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, so a friend of the show, Johnny Two Cellos, a friend of mine, did a whole thing about this, and he pointed out, and we're not there yet, so I don't know how I feel about it, but that it was a way to have their cake and eat it too, to do the mystery plot that was a key component of the Hobgoblin story.
Yes.
While also giving time to build up to the Green Goblin of like Norman Osborn, the relationship with Peter, building up to that. And I was like, When you phrase it like, again, I'm not there, so I don't know. But when you phrase it like that, that makes sense. That tracks. Like, it's...
Yeah. The reveal of Green Goblin is great. Like, the Green Goblin stuff is awesome, and the animation goes back to being good for some reason in all of his episodes, and I don't know why, but it's really good. Despite all, like, the kid garbage that, like, the show gets bogged down with eventually. Yeah. Like, those are episodes I watched. After watching these four episodes, I was like, oh, let's see how it goes. Let's see where it ends up. And I watched, like, a whole bunch of Green Goblin episodes. And I'm like, this is really good. And the dude who plays Norman is, like, in it for the long haul. You know, it's like Billy Dee Williams getting the job for Two-Face, being like, one day,
you do this
legwork, you will get to do something really cool and juicy. But Norman Osborn actually gets the payday one day.
Exactly. Billy Dee Williams gets to show up as Two-Face in the Batman 89 comic decades later, and also Lego Batman.
Yeah, and Lego Batman. Yeah. And listen, Billy Dee Williams got a check for nothing.
Yes.
He got the same amount of money to be in a really bad movie. Instead, to be nothing. To
yes.
do nothing.
So many people got paid off to not be in Batman Forever.
I know. Didn't Marlon Wayans get a nice big check?
Yeah, because he was
supposed
to be Robin. Fucking wild. Yeah. So Spidey runs out of web fluid, which will be a problem that dogs him in all these episodes. Like, for some reason, these episodes really want to hammer home that Spider-Man needs to reload the web fluid.
Yeah, I like that. It always adds an element of tension, and it also is a great economic storytelling, because in the early one, I don't remember if in the early one he has to reload, but like, I think he does. But you know, we're showing this is how the webbing works. Yes. This is how it works. He's got to put web cartridges in.
Yeah, you got to put little pills in there, and then all the webbing comes out of those.
Yeah, I don't know what the pills are. Maybe the pills are like that's just the. Yeah, I don't know.
That's the supplements for the webbing. It needs its daily supplements.
That's right. They don't look like that in the comics, but whatever.
So the Widow spray. Spider-Man's fighting the Widow. It sprays a wall with some sort of kind of oil, and Spider-Man's like, it took out my spider stickiness. So he ends up riding the Widow. The Spencer confuses Flash for the real Spider-Man, of course. And of course. Spider-Man does. This is actually pretty cool. This is a pretty good solution to the problem. Spider-Man throws his web cartridges into the Widow's propulsion. Ties it up because I guess he reloaded, and then because it can't jet away, it tosses it in the acid, which has to be, this is just a big open vat of acid. That has to be an OSHA violation.
There's no way. But also, I mean, like, that is standard practices. I mean, how else are we going to get Jokers and stuff?
I mean, yeah, listen, if we're going to get some more Jokers in here, we got to just have open vats of acid just
open
lying
vats.
Around.
And big enough to, like, have giant mechs fall into them.
Exactly. Mech-sized vats of acid that are strong enough to burn through this thing's armor. So the whole place explodes. We do get a moment where, like, Flash and Spidey have, like, a heart-to-heart. Wow.
Yeah.
As everything's on fire, like, hey, man, that wasn't cool. Flash is like, I know, don't tell him about it. He's like, guys, you're on a ticking clock. This whole place is about ready to go up. You have this conversation later.
Right.
Spencer does not get out. Spencer Smythe. Before we resolve that, back at Jameson's place, Felicia's yelling at Flash, which, how far away, how long did she wait around? How far away is the place that Flash is now back at the...
Right. It's her party. So I guess she's overseeing, like, everybody leaving, you know, or whatever. I don't know. It's weird. I got that, like, that was, like, the next day, but everyone's still wearing the same clothes, so
yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, so it's weird. Listen, they didn't want to have to animate a whole other background.
Damn right.
Then she says Peter for being a coward, which I think is a little unfair because he was protecting
his
Aunt May.
Yeah, a little harsh, but also that's Peter Parker. That's the Parker luck, man. He got smooched and dumped at the same, in the same breath.
At the same party, J. Jonah Jameson cans Brock, claiming that he made JJ look like a laughingstock, including Fox, which I have to imagine was just a dig at that was the Fox Kids is the network that this was on.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it was. But, yeah, Fox is always big on self-deprecation. The Critic did it, Simpsons did it.
It's also a little ahead of its time and how we'll view Fox News in the future.
That's really funny.
Anyway, meanwhile, Alistair is just looking, pouting over the explosion that made him lose his dad. And he, like, rewatches in his head, and it's like, we just saw it. We just saw it.
We get it.
Kingpin arrives and makes him a deal that if he makes new Spider Slayers to get revenge on the man responsible for his father's disappearance. It's like, wait, what? I'm pretty sure that dude got blown up. Like, what do you mean
he
disappearance?
He did get blown up, but then later they'll reveal he's actually in, like, a bubble somewhere. Like,
okay, I assume this was a censor's thing, like, we can't say death or died or dead.
They definitely, as far as I think everyone's concerned in this show, he's dead.
He is dead, but we say disappearance for the kids.
But they also bring him back later. So yeah, that's that. That's
yeah, well, there you go. That's yeah, fucking wild. Fucking wild. So yeah. Those are the first two episodes of Spider-Man, the Amazing Series. the animated series. Oh my goodness. Oh, so there is a chance that we like to do this sometimes with our first parts, that we drop them on live for the kids at home for free. If you're there and you want to hear us talk about the rest of the Spider-Man, they made it. If you want to do that, you can go over to patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Sal, where can they find you?
You can find me mainly over at youtube.com/comicpop. It's the name of our brand. We got two channels, Comic Pop Returns, but you can find everything over on Comic Pop. Subscribe, check it out, and you'll enjoy me and my friends talking about comic books all day. It's great.
Do yourself a favor and go over there. You can find me at DJ Talks Trash, and you can find this show, all the Only Stupid Answers stuff, at Only Stupid Answers, but on Twitter, yank out the vowels from stupid, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.